I want Parakhov, Pasuk Gid Gimel, Kesher Hoga Min HaMesila, Avar Kali Shach Reyov, Lir Dov HaKorei Shavim Bechri. So, listen, once he was removed from the high road, this is after Amasa had already been killed. Once Amasa had been killed, and then every person just went after Yoav because they didn't have anything to weigh back now. Again, remember, they saw Amasa dead in the road. They couldn't believe it. They were like, what in the world? Why would he have been killed? But once they saw he was removed, they said, all right, let's go. Let's go after Shevim and Bechri. Vayavor b'chol shifti Yisrael. Avelo b'smacha b'chol abeirim. Vayikalu v'yavo afachrov. So he passed through all of the shvatim of Yisrael. Avel, b'smacha, beirim. And they gathered and they came after him. Now, who did that is the question. Who's the one that passed through these different areas? So one opinion is that it was Shevim and Bechri did it. That's the Radak. And the Shevim and Bechri, the Rashi says it as well. The Radak and Rashi say that Shevim and Bechri, and he went from each place trying to gather people and gathering after him, trying to put through. Some say that there's Vayikohalu and Vayiklahu means they were so easy to change allegiances. They went from David to Shevim and Bechri back to David and Melech. You saw clearly that something was wrong right over here. Others say that the word Kal means that they were swift and they went out quickly. In other words, it was Yoav who sent all this out. And that's how the Barbanel and the Radak second shot says. That is referring to Yoav who went through all the Shvatim Yisrael trying to find where Shevim and Bechri was. So he sent the Kal riders, and that's why Vayiklahu, as opposed to Vayikalu, they went through to see who exactly was going where. Vayavo Vayitzur Eilav Ba'avela. And they were able to trap him in Avel Beis Amacha, which is right by the area of Beis Amacha. Yishbechu Solul Al-Ir. They poured a mountain of earth right up until the city itself. Atam Bechel. They stood in a formation right by the walls. B'chol Amasheres Yoav, Mashkizun L'Hapel Achoma. All the people that were with Yoav were planning to knock down that wall to do anything they could. Now here's the pshat over here. Shevim Bechri was obviously rebelling against the king by giving him refuge of some sort, by allowing him to be there. So the people that were living in Avo became accomplices to the crime, and therefore Yoav's forces were permitted not only to besiege the city, to siege the city itself, but to destroy the people that were inside there, right around there, okay? Now, that's one thing over there. We already said that they poured a mound of earth. There's a question of what that meant exactly. Some say the mound of earth was simply put so they could climb to the top of the wall, right? They started pouring mounds and started to climb, and then eventually they went through, right? They kept going up and up and up, in order to go through, determining, others say that they used a mound all the way there so they could determine which was the best place to be able to knock down the wall. So they looked higher and looked into the city so they would be able to find out exactly what it's going to be. Others refer to the Solela is a catapult. They were throwing blisteros into the city, knocking things down, right? Others say they changed tactics. They began removing the stones of the wall. There's two parts of a wall to a city. There's the Choma and then the Chel. The Choma is the outer wall where everybody goes around. When you get past the Choma, then there's the Chel. The Chel was a smaller little area. So the first position of defense was in the outer wall. The second position of defense was the inner wall. So you went in from one to the other, and that's that. So therefore, it seems like they sieged it, and they got to Batamu Bechel. They were able to get to the Chel, and all the people of Yoav were destroying the outer wall so they could let the rest of the forces in. So the first warriors were able to get past the Choma into the Chel, and now everybody's trying to get in, trying to go through. Others say that it was Chil, as in a terror, gripped them and they realized that they were going to die. Right, and that's the people that happened right over there. So it's in Pasuk Tezayin, Vatikra Isha Chachamim in the ear. So the wise woman called out from the city. The Abarbanel says this is the 684-year-old Serach Bas Asher. 684 years old at the time. She called from the city, Shimu, Shimu, Imru Na El Yoav. Listen, listen, I beg to speak to Yoav. Kravet Hein Vatabre Lecha, come close to the city that I can speak with you. Vayikra Vela, and he came close. Vatomar Isha Ata Yoav, are you Yoav? Vayomar Ani, yes I am. Vatomar Shmati Vriya Masecha, listen to the words of your maidservant, Vayomer Shomei Anochi, I'm listening at this time. Now, Serach Bas Asher, as we all know, if this referring to Serach Bas Asher, Serach Bas Asher was the Mavasar Tova for Klal Yisrael for two different reasons, maybe possibly even three. We know that she's the one who told Yaakov Avinu, right, that Yosef was still alive. She's the one who was sent to be able to do that. We also know that Serach Bas Asher was the one who found Yosef Atzadik, meaning when Moshe Rabbeinu was looking for his bones, she's the one that said, oh, he's either in the Nile River or the Kabarnit Shomalachim. She's the one who knew where Yosef was buried. The third thing, which is sort of like a 2A category, is that she also knew the words of Pakod Pakadati, which was going to be given over to the Mashiach whenever Mashiach was going to come, which eventually became Moshe Rabbeinu. She had those. Over here also, she said to Yoav, you're known as a Talmid Chacham. Clearly there's something wrong. You don't wage war against the city without asking first if they want to make peace. Why did you come to us without asking us to make shalom first? Why did you do that? Batomer Lemor, she spoke saying, Dabir Dabir Varishona, first they should have spoken, saying, Sha'ol Yishalu Ba'avel V'chein Yisamu. Let them ask of Avel, and they would have concluded the matter. In other words, I don't understand. You should have asked us what we wanted to do over here, and we would have told you what it had been over here. We're not sure. Did the king make a gezera here that anybody who's harboring fugitives like Shevim and Bichri is going to be killed? Is this on your own doing? Are you doing it on your own? Or is this just a military formation? I want to know, because that the defense that we're going to use is going to be based on what you're doing over here. Is this straight from David? Is it on your own? Who is it exactly? Now, the funny thing is, she was right. Yoav was not permitted to do any of this. It was in the hands of Amasa, not in the hands of Yoav. And even when Amasa didn't show up because he saw that they were learning Torah and didn't want to go involved whatsoever, it was Avishai's. It was not Yoav's decision. So that's why it was a little bit of a shock. What she said, did David give you permission? Technically, she was right. David did not give her permission whatsoever.
Yeah, but did he need permission if the quote-unquote precedent was set with, like, no Bira Kahanim, the same situation's happening? David rebelled. Shaul went after him.
And that was wrong.
But was it wrong because he didn't ask permission? Or he didn't ask them if they wanted to give him, like... Is it wrong for the same reason?
It's wrong for the same reason why Amasa, who was it at the time? I'm sorry, Avner, didn't want to do it in the first place. Because Avner said, I'm not killing anybody for you. I'm not doing that. Right? So Avner knew that something was wrong with what was happening. And Doi Goadomi is the one who was willing to get up and do it. But it was wrong. And everybody knew it was wrong. Nobody doubted that. I think that's the idea. And then it says in Pasuk Yutes, Anochi Shlumi Amuni Yisrael, I am loyal and faithful to all of Bnei Yisrael. There are tremendous ideas that are coming from these words over here. Shlumei Emune, the Likutei Sichos actually has something on here, Rav Nachman Breslov. But it says, Atam Vakash Lami's ear, you want to destroy an entire city of Ein Yisrael among the with together the mother of Yisrael, right? Lama Tavala Nachal Hashem, why should you swallow up in the Nachla of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How could you go ahead and do and destroy a major metropolis over here? How could that be? Others say Shlumi Amune is a reference to what she was doing when she was back there, saving Bnei Yisrael in some way, shape, or form. In addition, there's a Medrash Rabbah that says this was Yocheved, not Sarah.
So she's even older.
Unbelievable,
oh, no,
right?
She's not older.
No, she would have been younger, but right. Still unbelievable. She was Levi's daughter. But that's crazy. That is absolutely crazy. If Yocheved was the person over here, she would have been around this stage, around 600, 650 at this time. But that's unbelievable. Anyway, Pasachov, Vayan Yoav Yomer, Chalila, Chalila li, Yovali Mashkis, Chalila, that I'm the one who destroy, I'm the one to kill people? Yeah, like you haven't killed enough people, Yoav. But either way, Lo Chena Davor, that's not true. Ki Ish Me Harafraim, Shev Ben Bichri Shmo. There's a man from Harafraim, his name is Shev Ben Bichri. Nasa Yodu Bamelech B'David. He put up his hand, he raised his hand against the king David HaMelech. Meaning, the king and David HaMelech. If it was just that David HaMelech was a Talmud Chacham, that would be enough to kill him. But he's also doing it against the king. No matter who the king is, that's something that's wrong. Tinos Olivadai, give him to us alone. The Elcham Yalair, and I'll go away from the city. And the woman said to Yoav, listen, we're going to send his head to you from across the wall itself, right? That's the idea behind it. So that's how Rashi said it before and what I said. But the Malbim says, rebels, his answer to her question, why didn't you ask us for peace beforehand, was you're rebels. You have Shevim and Bichri among you. You are not allowed to have any peaceful overtures, right? We don't know what you're doing. We think that you're harboring a fugitive. And we already got past the Choma. We got up to the hill. It's clear that you were fighting for yourselves. Why was that allowed, right? Maybe Yoav even lost men in this battle. Right? To which Sarach, by saying, well, you should have asked us for a peace first, is sort of like, what? Come on. Then you shouldn't have fought us in the first place. You should have let us right in because you knew you were harboring somebody here. The woman came to the people in wisdom. Now, the reason why it was in wisdom is because she had to negotiate an agreement. The people might have been on his side, on Shevim and Bichri's side. She had to make sure that they were going to agree to send his head over. They cut off the head of Shevim and Bichri, and they sent it out to Yoav. They blew the shofar, and the people scattered from the city. Each man back to his tent. And Yoav went back to Yerushalayim to the king itself. Now, the Medrash and the Mari Kera both say that she pretended like she was negotiating an agreement. She said to the people of Avel, Yoav demands 1,000 inhabitants to be handed over to him for them to be killed, right? Only then will he lift the siege. But I'm going to go and speak to him. Maybe he'll relent. And then she pretended to go speak to him. She came back and said, okay, as long as we give one person Shevem Bichri, then he's going to leave. They're like, fine, done. Right? Once she did that, it is already like, oh, wow, you went from 1,000 to 1. Good job, Sarah. You really did it that way. Right? Not realizing that that was the idea, right, from the first place. But that's why they were going to do such a thing. Now, the Abarbanel says, the reason why they chose to behead him themselves was so that Yoav's men wouldn't torture him. They knew that he was going to die eventually. Don't let him be tortured. Let's kill him first. They also didn't want to give Sheva a chance to implicate any of Avil's citizens. Because if they would have said, who was on your side, he might have said certain people, and that would be co-conspirators. Maybe Sheva and Bichri asked for this. He might have asked. He said, kill me rather than give me into the hands of David and Melech. I don't know. We have absolutely no idea what it's going to be. Now, there is a halacha that's based on this. And it's a very confusing halacha. If a group of bandits come up and say, send us one of your numbers so that we can kill him, or chas v'shalom, send us one of the web, both of these, send us a member, a woman among you so that we can do what we want with her. If they don't specify, say, send us whoever you want, Kameli. If they say, send us whoever you want, then halachically you cannot send anybody else. Pilegish Begiva, they ask for one specific person. When you're asking for one specific person, then we allow it. We're toward the end of Parakhov. So you can do such a thing by somebody where they ask for one as opposed to many, many at a time. But it is a very strange halacha, and it's learned out from over here. Since they asked for Shevem ben Bichri, said Tzarech, the halacha is we should send out Shevem ben Bichri rather than have the whole city killed. But if he would have said, send us anyone, but one person has to come out, they would have to fight rather than allow themselves to be killed. And there's quite a bit when it comes to stuff like this. It is halachic. Sefer Hasidim says, even if it's chosen by lottery, unless the lottery is with the Urim Metumim, you are not allowed to send somebody out to be killed. You can't say, well, the lottery decided from the hands of a Kadosh Baruch Hu who's going to be killed. You can't do that. They have to specify somebody, and if not, you got to fight to the death. You have to be willing to fight to the death itself. Pasuk Chav Gimel, guys. Yoav, yeah. Shmuel Beis. Yeah, Shmuel Beis. Pasuk Chav Gimel. Okay. V'yoav el kol atzav Yisrael. Now, Yoav was in charge of the entire army of Israel. U'b'nei ben yada ala kriz v'aplesi. B'nei ben yada was still in charge of the slingers and archers. We said before that that doesn't really refer to slingers and archers. It really refers to the Sanhedrin. Now, it is interesting. We already mentioned a lot of these names before, but it is amazing that 30-odd years have passed since David HaMelech became in charge, and it's still the same people in charge. Yoav's still there. B'nei ben yada is still there. It is really amazing. And now that we have resumed control and kingship of David HaMelech, we want to go through those names once again, especially what happened over Shevem ben Bichri. Now, the kash is why Yoav? Yoav should not have been in charge of the army. He already deposed him, right? He took him down and he put Amasa and then Avishai in his place. Why is Yoav chosen? It could be David HaMelech did not feel that he had the power to take down Yoav, especially after he just destroyed Shevem ben Bichri's rebellion so quickly. He felt that he owed something to Yoav, but it is strange, and that's why he tells his son, I think you need to take care of it for me. Vadoram Elamas, the man Adoram was in charge of taxes. V'yoshafa ben Achilun Amaskir, he was the secretary. Ushva Sofer, Shva was the name of the scribe. Tzadok of Yasser were Kohanim, right? Gam Iraya Iri HaKohen LeDavid. Not only that, but there's also Iraya Iri, who was the Kohen for David. Now, Kohen does not mean as the Kohanim. He may have been a Kohen, and that is a possibility. In fact, the Medrash says they used to give all of his Trumos and Maestros, Trumos, he used to give straight to Iri Iri. Normally, you give Trumos to the Beis HaGranos, and the Beis HaGranos gives it out to whatever Kohen comes. He specifically gave it to Iri Iri, and the Gemara says doing such a thing can cause famine to come into the world by giving to only specific Kohanim and not giving to others. And they learned that because here it says Iri Iri was the Kohen for David, and then it talks about a famine that happened right afterwards. So it seems that that's not a good thing to do. Now, Ira Yeiri, there is a man, Ira, the son of Ikesh, the Tekoasi, who's mentioned in Parakhov Gimels, we'll see later on. It could be that Yeiri was his father's name. Tekoa was the city name, and therefore he's known as both. That's a possibility over there. There's no way that this is Yair ben Menashe, because if he was a Kohen, Yair ben Menashe was simply put, he was a Menashe guy, so that's that whatsoever, and that's that. Maybe Yair was a reference to Tekoa, because Yair means to light up, and Tekoa was well known for their oil, which you use to light, obviously, right? That's how Rashi understands it right over here.
Kohen Ledavid, maybe he's not literally Kohen, maybe it's an advisor to David. Because we just mentioned two Kohanim. And it would be strange for anybody to have a personal Kohen, wouldn't it?
Not really. It's actually interesting. When you brought Korbanos to the base of Mikdash, now granted the base of Mikdash wasn't around at this time, you could sacrifice anywhere, but it's very important to have a Kohen. Because no, if you don't, who, you know, anybody could take your stuff and they could be mafagalit. You don't want that. You want a guy who's yours.
Do you have a specific Kohen that's quote unquote yours, or do you just go to a Kohen?
I know. I was friends with a bunch of Kohanim that I didn't necessarily like, just so I knew I would have a Kohen when the Beis HaMikdash was rebuilt. I haven't learned with them in a while, so unfortunately, I don't think they're going to be my personal Kohanim anymore. But I did it on purpose. I did it on purpose, and I learned with them on purpose, even though I didn't like them, just because I thought that they were really good. That doesn't include Akiva Steinmetz. Akiva Steinmetz is an awesome guy. But the others, you know, sort of. But either way, but yeah, I, in theory, you can have your own Kohen. In theory. But again, giving your Trumo straight to that guy is not a good idea. When you're something crazy, some say the Iri is Hushai Ha'arki. Hushai Arki, who just saved David HaMelech by going and being the double agent in Avshalom's whatever, is Iri Iri. It's the same person. They're still around. Hey, it's unbelievable. When Iri Iri was alive, David HaMelech sat on cushions and rugs. Once Iri Iri passed away, he considered himself the new Rebbe, so therefore he only sat on the ground. He wanted to show that he was going to be different, right? He was different from what his Rebbe was. Something was going to be different. Okay, either way, regardless, that's that. Let's look in Perek Chof Aleph now, everyone. This is an unreal Perek. One of the strangest prakim in all of Tanakh. But really, once we learn it properly, we're going to see there's a lot that we're missing in this story. Perchof al Pazagalo says, there was a hunger in the days of David, Shloshanim, for 3 years, Shana Achre Shana, it was year after year, for 3 years straight. By Vakish David is Pnei Hashem, David Davin Hashem, Vayomar Hashem al Shol, right? Shem said, it's about Shol, Del Besa Domim, and for the house of blood, Al Shehem is the Givonim, because he killed the Givonim. Okay. I'm sorry? The Givonim. So we're going to see. We're going to see about this. But number one, consulting the Urim Tumim. This is what he did after 3 years. That's what it means that he, by Yivakish Dov is Pnei Hashem. How do you search the face of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Even if you're a Navi, you can't really do that. He says he used the Urim Tumim to determine exactly what happened. Now, there is a Machlokas when this happened. Almost everyone says this was before Avshalom chased his father from Yerushalayim. This was sometime beforehand. We don't know exactly when, 3 years in a row. Others say, no, it happened afterward. It was the last 3 years of David HaMelech's life when he resumed full control. Now, what's weird about that is that he was technically 68 when he took back over the kingdom after Avshalom's rebellion. So for this famine to be for 3 years is weird because he wasn't alive for 3 years. He was only alive for another two. So if it happened after Avshalom, yeah.
I mean, we don't know. When he asked, say it could have been.
It says after 3 years, by Yerubim Medavid Shloshanim, right, and by Yivakish David Pnei Hashem, and then he davened. So it seems like that. And remember, when he asked, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him what it was. He fixed it, and the Rav stopped. So it'd be weird if it was 3 full years and it happened afterward, and it goes through over here. Now, when we say El Shol, we have to remember the following: the famine should have come in Shol HaMelech's time. If it was because of what he did with the Givonim, the famine should have been then. Right? Or it should have happened a long time ago, because when Shaul HaMelech died, right, they did something wrong immediately by not burying him correctly, not giving a proper hesped at the time of his funeral, right? And because of that, it's possible it should happen right then. But the pshat is like this. Shaul HaMelech was like a sycamore tree, like an erez, where, yes, he can stand up against a lot, but if a big wind comes, he'll blow right over. The generation of his time was not ready for something. If there would have been something that happened in his time, then they would have just faltered. They all would have failed. A 3-year famine, they wouldn't have been able to handle it. David HaMelech's time, they were much wealthier. They were already, you know, by the end of his reign, the people were really big tzaddikim. Yeah, unfortunately, they thought of themselves a little bit more than they normally were, but they were big tzaddikim. They were able to handle a 3-year famine. They were still able to handle something like that. And therefore, we waited to be able to punish the people who can handle being disciplined. And quite often, by the way, that applies to ourselves. Sometimes we'll see ourselves being punished and we can't think of a reason as to why it's so. By the way, you probably could think of a reason. We just, you know. But there are some times where we look at ourselves and we're like, no, I really didn't deserve that. And then it's possible it's not because of you. You're strong enough to be the strength that your father, grandfather, great-grandfather could not have done. And even though normally, lo yusu avos albanim, lo yusu banim alavos, children cannot die for their father's sins, but if you continue in your father's ways, unfortunately, doing things that you know is not the best thing to do, it's possible you to be punished. And that's the idea behind it. Okay, that is that. It's possible that it was pushed off a little bit until the days of David HaMelech itself. Now, in the first year after there was a famine, David HaMelech assumed it was because of his sin. So he said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, maybe it's because of Avodah Zarah, and that's why the rains have ceased. So he said, he davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and obviously, like he went around the entire people, not a single bit of a avodah zarah throughout the land. I said, okay, maybe it's because of the second year, Gilui Arayos. Maybe there's Gilui Arayos involved. So he went around, sent a nation, sent a message to the entire nation. No Gilui Arayos. Nobody was over on Gilui Arayos. Could you imagine that? 2 years, nobody's over on avodah zarah or Gilui Arayos throughout the entire nation. Yeah, that would work nowadays, right? Okay. That's where we're holding, right? Okay. In the third year, he said, maybe there are people that publicly pledged to give to tzedakah and didn't give. You hear that? Publicly pledged to give tzedakah and didn't give. But they searched, not a single person had done that. Are you kidding? I could search five people, and I'll bet you I could find that in four of the five, right, to be able to pledge tzedakah. Everybody does that. So Davanel said, it's got to be my fault. And that's why he called the Urim Tumim to say what had happened right over here. But by the way, the reason why he said these types of things is because he was worried Pesel Micha. Remember Pesel Micha from Shevet Dan? He wasn't sure if Pesel Micha was still there. The immorality, the Gilui Arayos, because Avshalom had violated his 10 concubines. He was wondering if that was from there. But either way, regardless, there were three things that were around over here. Number one, Shaul had been insufficiently buried. Meaning, for the king of Klal Yisrael, he should have gotten a much better burial. Number two, he should have gotten a much better hesped. Somebody should give a hesped. Now, yes, David Melech praised him at the end of his life, and he even made a song based on Shaul Melech. It wasn't enough. Shaul Melech deserved more. He deserved much more than that, and he never got it. And the third one is because of the Givonim that happened in Nov. Now, what exactly happened with the Givonim? Now, who were the Givonim? We know that there were Givonim who decided that they wanted to become Jewish. So they fooled Yoshua into faking, pretending to be a nation from far, far away. They pretend they were far away. They were really from really close by. Yoshua caught them and said, I'm not going to have you killed, but I'm not going to let you join the nation. You're going to be woodcutters and water carriers from now on for the Mishkan itself. So they lived together with Nov Ira Kohanim. When Shaul HaMelech had the Nov Ira Kohanim destroyed, the city of Kohanim destroyed, along with the Kohanim, he killed the Givonim as well. That's one opinion. One opinion is that the people, the Givonim, were actually killed. Many of them were. Some of them actually survived.
David must have known,
but he didn't think they were going to be blamed for it. That's Shaul's fault. Let Shaul be blamed for it. He didn't think he was going to be blamed for it. But because David HaMelech was the one who caused the Givonim to die, because he was among Nov Ira Kohanim, therefore a little bit of the blame was put at his feet. Number two, he didn't kill the Givonim, Shaul HaMelech. He took away their parnassa. The parnassa of the Givonim was to give water and wood to the Mishkan. When the Mishkan was gone, well, guess what? There's nothing to do. So because of that, they said, it's as if he killed them. It's as if he took it away. Number three, it could be that they had not asked for mercy for Shaul HaMelech. Maybe they didn't ask. They didn't daven on his behalf. When Bnei Yisrael heard that Shaul HaMelech wasn't going to be king anymore, the collective response was like, who's next? Right? That was the response. The response should have been, what do you mean? Shaul HaMelech, we want Shaul HaMelech to be king. And you never hear any of the people davening for Shaul HaMelech to remain king. You never hear of it whatsoever. And number two, it could be because they stood idly by as David HaMelech was chased from Yerushalayim to wander about the desert. Only Barzillai Giladi and Hushai Arki and Tziva were the ones who brought him food, but everybody else ran away. It's clear that something was wrong with what Klal Yisrael did. Okay, Pasuk Beis. Vayikra Melech Givonim, the king called to the Givonim, Vayomar Alem, and he said to them, Vagivonim lo b'nei Yisrael heim, Givonim were not part of b'nei Yisrael. Ki miyeser ha'amori, they were the remnants of the Amorim, Bnei Yisrael, Nishbalem, and Bnei Yisrael had sworn to them, Vayivaka Shaul Lakos, and Vakanos, and Bnei Yisrael, Yehuda. And Shaul HaMelech wanted to kill them in his zealousness for Bnei Yisrael and for Yehuda itself. They were not in the, it seems, the Givonim were not working at the time. They lived in Kiryas Yearim. Kiryas Yearim was near Yerushalayim. That was the area where today, Kiryas Yearim is called Telstone, right around that area, right around there. And that's what ended up happening right over here. So now, there's a question exactly what happened, but let's see what happens over here in Pasuk Gimel. So he called to them and he asked them what they need. What can I do for you? How could I atone for what happened to you? Borcho is Nachal Hashem, so you could bless the inheritance of God by allowing the rain to fall. It's you. We just need you to daven. What do we need to do? So what's he expecting? He's expecting reparations. You know what reparations are, right? Give them a little bit of money, and that'll be okay. Then everything will be done. So I'll pay you. We don't want any silver or gold to Shaul in his household. We don't want to kill any single person in Bnei Yisrael. What are you saying? He said to them, that I can do for you. They said to the king, Vashadima Lanu, the man who annihilated us, who plotted against us, Nishmadnu, and persecuted us, Misyati Bhogvo Yisrael, from standing among all the borders of Yisrael, Yutan Lanu Shiva Anashim Ibanov, give us 7 men of his children. Boka Anum Hashem, and we'll hang them to Hashem, Begivas Shol and Givat Shol, Bechir Hashem, who is the chosen one of God. Vayomer Melech, Aniyatain. And the king said, okay, I'll give you 7 people to kill. Clearly something's wrong here, right? Something sounds a little wrong about this. We want to kill 7 innocent people. And David's like, yeah, fine. No, that's fine. That's fine. $20 or 7 dead people? It's about equal. What in the world is going on? So to go back, we have to go back quite a bit over here in order to understand this. Now, number one, it's possible that these members of Shaul's family were directly responsible for the Givonim's death. That the 3 sons that died with Shaul were not. They were in the army, etc. But when Shaul HaMelech wanted the Givonim dead, he asked his own sons to take care of it, and they were the ones who took care of it. Maybe the 7 that were killed over here were personally involved in the massacre in Nov. Personally involved, and they all could have stopped it and everything like that when it came to that. It's possible that Shaul HaMelech had a conspiracy theory against the Givonim. He said, I don't know what's going on in Nov. I don't know what's going on in the Givonim. If I let any of them live, I'm going to have a problem. So he wanted to destroy them or drive them out from the land of Israel. So that's why they left the city of Nov and ran to Yavesh Gilad, to Kiryas Yearim, because they had to get as far away from Shaul HaMelech as they could, right? And they were worried about that. When David HaMelech heard what they wanted, he said, there's no way these guys are ever going to become Jewish. Yoshua had made it that these people, the Givonim, were going to be water carriers and wood choppers, wouldn't join Klal Yisrael. But that was temporary. If eventually they decide they're going to be good people, they can join Klal Yisrael. But David Melch said, no, never. I'm never going to let this happen. Why? There are 3 signs of Jewish people. They have to be Vaishanim, embarrassed. They have to be, what else do they have to have? Anovim, they have to have humility. And they have to have Nadvanim, they have to be generous. These people are none of that. Look at what they're willing to do over here. It's absolutely crazy that these people are going to remain non-Jews. And that's why the Pasuk points out right over here, Lo mibnei Yisrael hema, that David HaMelech Ke'ilu was saying they are not part of Bnei Yisrael when it came down to it over there. Now, it could be that there's even more. Maybe the Givonim were even asked by Shaul HaMelech where David HaMelech was hiding, and the Givonim refused to say anything. Maybe that's the pshat. So maybe that's why it was happening over here. Maybe there would be a little bit of Akar Zatov right over here. Right? And that's that. And David HaMelech, for his part, was willing to say, I will let you get anything you want, but I want to pay you for it. I'm willing to give you millions of dollars, whatever you guys want for it, but that's that. And they said, no, we don't want riches, because riches cannot replace what we lost. But they sat there and they said, we are bloodthirsty. We want people to die for this. We can't kill Shaul HaMelech, he's dead. We can't kill Doeg Gadomi, he's dead. There's no servants that can be blamed, because servants only follow what their masters is. So the only ones, and plus not only that, they refused. Because remember, only Doeg Gadomi did it, and maybe possibly Shaul's sons. The only ones that could be held responsible are the house of Shaul itself. Now,
how many were left?
8, apparently. 8 direct descendants. So we'll see. He was able to save Mephibosheth, but he wasn't able to save everybody else. Now, David HaMelech went up to each individual and asked him what they could do, trying to persuade them. He said, don't you want the money? I'll give you money instead. How much do you want? But he couldn't convince them, even without the tzibor, just individually. He wasn't able to talk to them on their own, and it wasn't possible right over there. It's funny. Why didn't the Kohanim that were not in Nov make the same claim for revenge against the house of Shaul? They should have had the same claim, right? Nov was also destroyed. All the Kohanim were destroyed. Why shouldn't it be something like that? But I think they understood, and this is kind of obvious, how is killing somebody else going to rectify what happened? How does that help? How does that help? I know that our line is the Gol Adam. We want to take down the person who committed the murder. But is that really going to help you in the long run? Yeah, what are you saying? I guess these guys were already Chayiv Misa for somebody else. I don't know. There's something almost like, I know it's unconscionable. It's something that I cannot fathom putting into my mind. And Baruch Hashem, I've never had anything like this happen. But can you imagine killing somebody for somebody else? It's just a weird thing to say and do. It's a very, very, very strange thing altogether. I will tell you, there was a medrash that says there were 7 Givonim that were killed. 7 Givonim that were killed among Novi or Kohanim, and that's why they asked for 7 people to be killed from right over there. The reason why they asked for seven descendants, maybe because Mephibosheth was the only one right over there. Okay, not only did they want to kill them, guys, they wanted to make it a public hanging. They wanted the seven people to be left on the gallows for a long time. Normally, we hold that it's usher to put a body up and to be able to keep it up for longer, but here, the Gemara says they were left up from Pesach until Sukkot for 6 months through the summer. You know what happens to a dead body in the summer, right? Which is, although normally it's absolutely usher, this is a whole Rosh Hashanah. Now again, we have to look at ourselves and we have to say to ourselves, how in the world could David allow this to do it? Well, we're missing some things. Number one, they may have been guilty. Number two, David may have gone up to them and said, are you willing to do this? Are you willing to do it? And number three, the Urim and Tumim was involved. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew what these guys had done and they had been killed. I'm sorry? For David himself?
Yeah.
What would be the Nisayan?
That he should say that we're not going to do it. We're not going to just give up people from just give up Jews.
If it is, then he failed. Right? He did fail. And that cannot be, because it's never mentioned among the sins of David HaMelech. He asked the Urim and Tumim. The Urim and Tumim said it. Not only that, you'll notice the wording. It says, Migivas Shol, in the hill of Shol, Bechir Hashem, the chosen one of God. There's no way that Givonim said that he was the chosen one of God. So Chazal say that a bas kol came down from Shemaim and said Bechir Hashem when they mentioned the word Givat Shol for that reason. The only one that was not killed was Mephibosheth, the son of Yehonasan. The reason why he wasn't killed is because, remember, David HaMelech made a deal to Yehonasan that he would not allow his children to be killed, anything that happened to his kids. Let's look a little bit more. Pasuk Zayin. Vayachmu al Melech Mephibosheth ben Yehonasan ben Shol al Shvuas Hashem Shemidosan, because of the Shvu of Hashem that he made between his father and him, ben David ben Yehonasan ben Shol. Vayikach HaMelech Shnei ben Ritzvah. So the king took the two sons of Ritzpah, Ritzpah Basaya. Ritzpah Basaya is one of the most interesting people that come up in Tanakh. She's the one that was accused of being together with Avner, which caused the split between Avner and Ish-bosheth in the very beginning. She's the one for that supposedly she was with. She was a concubine of Shaul HaMelech. We don't know anything else about her, but apparently, right, Ritzpah Basaya is mentioned quite a bit. According to some Midrashim, Ritzpah Basaya was Shaul HaMelech's concubine who David married. David married her. She's the eighth wife of David HaMelech. Because if Eglah and Michal are two separate people, then we have Eglah and Michal. If Eglah and Michal are the same person, we don't have an eighth wife of David HaMelech. It could be it's Ritzpah Basaya. Asher yoldu l'Shol is Armoni vis Mephibosheth. There were two sons of Shol, Armoni and Mephibosheth. Interesting, right? Mephibosheth was Shol's kid, and Mephibosheth was Yehonasan's kid. So if you ever hear of a nephew being named after an uncle that's alive, it seems to be okay from what we see over here. There's two Mephibosheths. Now, it could be that this one is spelled without a yud, that one is spelled with a yud, I don't know. That's Chamesh b'nei Michal Bashol. And the five sons of Michal Bashol, she yodol Adriel, ben Barzilai Mecholasi, she gave birth to Adriel, the son of Barzilai, HaMecholasi. Now, there is a problem over here. Michal never married Adriel. If you remember, she married Paltiel, right? Paltiel. And some say there wasn't even a real marriage, right? Because he wouldn't be together with her. Who is Adriel? Adriel married Merav. So what does that mean? It seems that Merav had died, right? Merav had passed away. So Merav's kids were raised by Michal in the palace with David HaMelech. She had five kids, and those five kids were Michal's stepchildren, I guess you can call it. I don't know, stepchildren, I'm sorry. Her, nephews, right? And they were all raised by her, so they were her adopted kids. We'll call her adopted kids that went right over here, and that's that. Again, the Gemara says that before David HaMelech did anything, he passed them through the Aron HaKodesh, right? The Aron HaKodesh, or through the Urim V'Tumim, and none of them were saved because of what had happened over here. It's very, 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 very strange. Okay, I will tell you, by the way, I always learned that Mephibosheth ben Yehonasan was the one who was David HaMelech's Rebbe. Okay? It's mentioned Brachos, Daf Dalet. According to the Amloes, it's Mephibosheth, the son of Shaul, that was his Rebbe. Did you know that? This Mephibosheth, who's not mentioned anywhere else, by the way, he's not mentioned anywhere else in Tanakh, was the Rebbe of David HaMelech, and that's who we're talking about, right? And he davened for him to be saved, and he was not allowed, he couldn't get him, his tefillos were not answered. But that's a crazy thing altogether, because I always thought it was Mephibosheth ben Yehonasan. Even though Mephibosheth ben Yehonasan would have been younger than David HaMelech, okay, what difference does it make? David HaMelech learned from a younger Rebbe. He doesn't say. There's no source for this, and I don't know. I have absolutely no idea. I tried the back, unfortunately, in Shmuel Beis, he doesn't have any of the sources. So I don't know. But strange as anything, and I've never heard that anywhere else. I always thought it was Mephibosheth Ben Yohanan's son, but the truth is, I don't have a raya for that. And I tried looking up in the Gemara. I didn't check, you know, the Sifto with like the 1001, you know, different Meforshim. But I always assumed it was Mephibosheth Ben Yohanan's son. But according to this, it's Mephibosheth, the son of Shaul. Pasuk Tes, Vayina Biyagavonim, he handed them over to the Gibonim, Vayokium Bahar Lifnei Hashem. So he hanged them on the mountain in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yiplu Shivatom Yochad. They all fell as one, all seven as once. The Hema Humsu B'mei Katsir, they were killed in the days of the reaping. Barishonim, right at the first day of the harvest season, Bischilach Tzir Se'orim, at the time of the reaping of the barley. Normally, when do you reap barley? You reap barley on Pesach time. And that would make the most sense. What's crazy about this is, but they didn't have barley. It was a rov. It was a hunger. They shouldn't have had anything whatsoever. So some say everything was completely out of season. This was not Pesach. This is not Pesach. It was totally out of season because it should have been a lot later, but it wasn't. For whatever reason, it didn't happen that way. The word of... it's clear. The Pashup Shad it says it's referring to Nisan. It's just that it's a weird year because they were not reaping it. They shouldn't have been able to reap anything over here. I will say there were... Shivatom is a weird word. If you say Shivasayim Yukam Kayin, right? That's how Cain is going to get his revenge. That seven generations later, he's going to be killed by Lamech. Remember, Lamech shot him with Tuval Cain at the same time. So we don't know exactly what it means over here. Perhaps there's something happening over here. Shiva Sayim maybe refers to Mephibosheth, son of Shaul, Yohanan's son, who ended up surviving. There's something weird. But either way, regardless, it says right over here. Vatikach Ritzba Basai is a sack. So Ritzba Basai took sackcloth. Vatateu lo elatsur. She spread it out for herself on top of a rock. Mitchilas katsira nitach amayim aleim. From the start of the harvest until the rain fell. Minishraim from the heavens. Lo nasna ofa shraim lenuach aleim. Yomam veschai sara laila. She did not allow the birds of the heavens, the vultures, to go upon them during the day, nor the wild animals at night. Obviously, this was her kids. She had two of her kids over here. Clearly, she was trying to help, but she protected as much as possible. Some say, Mamish, 16th of Nisan to the 17th of Mar Cheshvan, when it started to rain. When the other nations of the world came and saw this, they said, wait a second, doesn't your Torah say you're not allowed to hang people for more than a day? It says you got to take them down by nightfall. Why do you hang these people? They said, oh, they did a terrible deed. So what did they do? They said, oh, well, the terrible deed is that they harmed lowly converts. So the people were like, so? They just killed converts. What's the big deal? Converts are nobodies. And they said, well, even killing lowly converts is a terrible thing. They said, who are these people? They're the sons of the previous king. Do you know what that sounds like? The people were so impressed. You mean you're killing princes because they made fun of Gerim? That's strange. That's strange. They consider it was considered a huge Kiddush Hashem that they were willing to do that for seemingly nothing there. Now again, we said there's Ol Ras Shah. It sounds terrible that Ritzba Bas Aya, right, was taking care of this and did everything like that. It's just absolutely crazy that that happened. But the rain did fall immediately afterward. The rain came right after that had happened. By Ritzba Bas Aya, the concubine of Shaul, look at what she did, right? She was doing over there. They told it over to David Melech, right? And he realized that something had to be right over here. By Yelech David, David went, by Yikach Azatzim Shaul, Azatzim Yonasan, Benome Is Bali Yavish Gilad. So he took the bones of Shaul and the bones of Yonasan, his son, from the people of Yavish Gilad. Why not the other two? It's possible Abinadav and Malkishua were never found. It's possible their bodies were already buried nicely. It was only Yonasan and Shaul that were taken by the police. We don't know. We have absolutely no idea. Asher Gunvu Osam Rechov Beishan, who had stolen them from Rechov Beishan, remember they were taken, Shaul and Yonasan's body, were brought all the way out to the land of the Plishtim. They stole it in Yavesh Gilad and brought it back. Asher Talum Shama Plishtim, where the Shama Plishtim, the Plishtim had hung them, hanged them there. Biyom Akos Plishtim Shaul Ba Gilboa. By Yalmi Shama Tatsumas Shaul Vesatsumas Yonasan, Benova Yatsumas Tatsumas Mukayim. He collected the bones of all those who had been hanged, right? Not only those two, but also the other seven. He decided now it was time. I don't know if this was immediate or not. Like, it kind of sounds like he, you know, subdued the Givonim, and then he didn't do anything about Shaul. Doesn't it sound that way? And then 6 months or 7 months later, he got up and he's like, all right, you know what? We really got to do something. So he reinterred them and gave them a hesped and did whatever he was supposed to do. It doesn't say that anywhere, but it is strange. So he buried them in Tzela by the kever of his father Kish. They carried out everything the king had commanded. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had granted the pleas of the land from that point on, and from that point on, everything was going to be okay. So we don't know if he actually eulogized them or if he didn't, but the Medrash tells us something absolutely unbelievable. During all the years that Shaul's body lay in Yavish Gilad, his body had not rotted or decayed. So even though normally you're not allowed to eulogize somebody who has already rotted or decayed, Shaul Melech's body had not. And therefore, he was permitted to still eulogize and was still considered as if it was within 30 days of the death, even though it wasn't when it came through there. They brought the casket throughout all of Klal Yisrael so that everybody could see Shaul Melech's casket. They made everybody come out and see it before they buried it, right? And they did that as well. And that is that, Baruch Hashem, the rain came right afterward. But he owed Mocham la Pelishim as Yisrael. There was more war with the Pelishim against Ben Yisrael. Yerid David va'avadav imo, so David and his servants went with him, v'yilachom was Pelishim v'yav David. They waged war against the Pelishim, and David got very, very tired. V'yishbi benov, who is the child of Harapha, which we're going to say is Orpah, the sister of what's it called, Rus, right? It says, he was there. Mishkal Keno, Shlosh Meos Mishkal Nechoshes. He had a spear that was 300 copper coins of weight. V'uchagar Chadasha, he was wearing a brand new belt. V'yimelahakos is David, and he wanted to kill David HaMelech over here. So again, some say Harapha was the name of the father. Some say Harapha is the Rephaim, which refers to the giants. Others say it's Orpah. It's Naomi's sister, who's mentioned right over here. Yishbi Benov, well, we have talked about this before. And again, we don't know if this is after the rebellion and after the Rav, or this is before the rebellion and before the Rav and what happened over here. What happened with Yishbi Benov? All right, we'll get it right here. Vayazul Avisha Ben Tzuria helped him. Vayachas the police, he killed the police by Mesei when he killed him. Aznish Boach, David Lamar. And then all the children, all the men of David, they swore to him saying, they said, Lo Seite Odi Tanul Mocham Velo Sevake, Lo Sechabez Ner Yisrael. You can no longer come with us to war anymore, right? You cannot extinguish the Ner of Israel. Now, we all know the story of Yishbi Benov. I'm just going to say it really quickly. Yishbi Benov was coming to exact retribution from David Melech because of what happened in Novir Kohanim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, how long will the sin go unpunished? Because you, the Kohanim that were in Nov, were destroyed. The Givonim blamed Shaul HaMelech, but you are because of you, Novir Kohanim was destroyed. So he said, would you rather you be punished or your children? And he said, let me be punished. So when there were one time when all the other warriors were at war, David Melech was hunting. And he saw a deer, and the deer started running away, he started chasing after it. He found himself in the land of the Plishtim. Yishbi Benov saw him, grabbed him, tied him up, and tried to grind him into little bits by putting a mill on top of him, like one of those huge stones or whatever, and tried smashing it on top of him. David HaMelech, Baruch Hashem, a massive miracle happened. The ground opened up and swallowed him up, so he wasn't able to be killed by the stone that was right on top of him. But it was really difficult for David HaMelech, and obviously this is not going to be an easy thing. Avishai ben Tzruya, on Friday, was taking a shower. As he's taking a shower and washing his hair, because that's what you're supposed to do on a Friday, right? All of a sudden, either a dove came and thrashed in his face, or blood started coming out from the water place right over there. Now, that would freak most people out. For Avishai, he said, oh, must be that David HaMelech is in trouble. Sort of like Lassie, right? He figured it out, right? And he said, David HaMelech is going to be in trouble, right? He said, I have to go do something really quickly. He ran to the base matters. He said, am I allowed to use the mule of the king and the rod of the king, the scepter of the king? Am I allowed to use it or not? Because he knew that the mule will go straight to David HaMelech. Somehow he knew that was going to work. So they said, you can do it if you feel that it's necessary. So he went there and did it. He found himself by there. As soon as Yishbi Benov saw him, he was scared. So he took David HaMelech, put a spear in the ground, threw him up in the air to make him fall on top of the spear itself. Avishai ben Tzruya said a shame of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, one of the names of Hashem, stood David HaMelech right up. Why couldn't David HaMelech say about himself? Because you can't take yourself out of jail. You can't keep yourself out of jail. David HaMelech was about to fall down. Avishai ben Tzruya grabbed him out. He took him and everything was fine. He said, what happened to you? He said, here's what happened. You know, it was either me or my children. And Avishai said, 100 other people could be killed rather than you. We need you for Klal Yisrael, so you can't let that happen. Avishai and him then ran after Yishbi Benov. Eventually they caught up with him. They said to him, your mother's in your grave, because on the way there, I forgot to mention, when he was on his way there, he saw Orpah, Vishab and Surya saw Orpah, and she threw something out like a spindle at him. He took it and threw it right back at her and nailed her in the head and killed her. He said, go see Orpah, she's in the grave. When he heard his mom, it was like your first Yo Mama joke. Once he heard that, he like immediately passed out, and that was that. They were able to kill him. That's Yishbi Benov of what happened over there. Yishbi Benov is a brother of Goliath. There was another war in Gov with the Pelishim. Then he killed killed Asaf, the name Saf, right? Who is also one of the children of Rafa. There was another war in Gov in Pelishim together with the Pelishim. Right? The son of Yari Orgim of Bethlehem, is Goliath Hagitias, Goliath, Beit Chan Yisrael Kamenod, Orgim, and the wooden part of his spear was like a weaver's beam. We already know what this is already, because if it's Goliath, we know who it was. It was David HaMelech. So the question is really why he's called Elchanan. But it seems pretty clear that Elchanan was the, you know, that he davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be able to help. It is really strange, though. In Divrei Hayamim, Aleph, it says Elchanan ben Yair slew Lachmi, the brother of Goliath. So it's not Beis HaLachmi as Goliath, it's he killed Lachmi, who's the brother of Goliath Agiti. That's what it says in Divrei Hayamim. So something might be a little bit messed up here in the wording, but either way, there's something behind that. Vayitihu Melchama Bagaza, was another war in Gaza. Yish Madon, there was another man who was huge. Etzbos Yadav, Etzbos Raglav, Shesh V'Shesh, Estrim V'Arba Mispar. He had six fingers and six toes on each hand and foot. All together, 6 plus 6 plus 6 plus 6, 24. 24 fingers and toes. Gamayu Ladla Rafa, he was also born of the Rafa. By Horef Yisrael, he degraded Ben Yitzhava Yakeo, Yehonasan Ben Shima, Achi David. Yehonasan Ben Shima, the brother of David. Shima is one of the brothers of David. Yehonasan, his son, killed him. Right? And that seems to be interesting. Yehonasan was different from Yonadav. You remember Yonadav? He was the scheming and opportunistic guy who ended up telling, what's his name, what to do? Adoniyahu, how to, not Adoniyahu, Amnon, what to do with his sister Tamar. Yonasan was a really, really big tzaddik, and everything was right over here. Some say Madon means he was just a massive warrior. Others say his name was actually Madon. I don't know what the raya is. That is six fingers in each foot. That's awesome. All right, as Arbas Ela Yodula Rafa Begas, all these four were born to the Rafa and Gas, by Yiplu Bia David Bia Ravadav, and they fell into the hands of David and all of his servants. And that's what happened over here. Okay, good. Parchav Beis, we're going to go through a song of David Melech, and then we have Parchav Beis, Chav Gimel, Chav Dal, which is the very end of Shmuel Beis. We're going to go through this song next time, quite a bit in this song over here, but we'll stop right here. We'll end over here, and we'll get back to that next time. Shkoyach, everybody.